We'll get back to our conversation with Tom Voigt as we drill down and investigate a 45-year-old murder mystery, the Zodiac Killer. Tom Voigt, the man behind ZodiacKiller.com. And if you've got a line, hold on to it. We will push the open hour segment into the last hour of the program here on Coast to Coast AM. George Norrie, of course, was in town, Toronto, just down the road from where I'm sitting, with his George Norrie Live event last week. I really enjoyed being there and some phenomenal guests. I just wanted to tell you quickly, I have my own little conspiracy confab going on east of the city in Oshawa on Sunday, November the 16th. So if you happen to be in the greater Toronto area, southern Ontario, maybe even upstate New York, would love for you to drop by. I've got eight amazing speakers. Don Schmidt, Roswell UFO crash investigator. Jim Peniston, of course, from the Rendlesham Forest UFO incident. Patty Greer on crop circles. Professor Ron Mallett talking about time travel. And this one I'm excited about. He's going to join us from Israel via a secured Skype line. And that is Simcha Jacobovici. Star of the hit TV show The Naked Archaeologist, and of course he's caused quite a firestorm in the media with this new book about the lost Gospels of Jesus, in which he contends Jesus was married and had children. So Simcha will be giving us sort of an exclusive interview. This will be his first conference since the book was published just recently. And also, there'll be a live past life regression on the stage with Debbie Papadakis and world-renowned mentalist Chaim Goldenberg. As well, Jim Elvidge, as well, electrical engineer, the author of The Universe Solved, will be talking about evidence suggesting we are living in a digital simulation, The Matrix. That's Sunday, November the 16th, the Regent Theater. And if you go to the website, followthetruth.tv, all the details are there, including information on how to order your pass. Followthetruth.tv. All right, back to the Zodiac Killer when we return here on Coast to Coast AM. Coast to Coast AM, Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie. Tom Voigt joins us. He's the man behind ZodiacKiller.com, and we are attempting to unravel the mystery, this murder mystery, 45 years later after the Zodiac Killer terrorized the San Francisco Bay Area, 1968, 1969, officially seven victims, although the Zodiac Killer sort of confessed through the media and his taunting letters that there may have been as many as 37 victims. Now, Tom, before we get back to the calls, you have a pretty good idea who you think the actual killer was or is. Is that right?
Well, my best candidate, the person that I feel is the best suspect I've ever seen in many different ways, and I'm privy to the original suspects that the police investigated because I have all of those reports. And then, of course, for the last 16 years, I've been collecting information about possible suspects through ZodiacKiller.com. There's actually a form you can fill out online. If you think you know who the Zodiac is, you can send me that information. So I have data about more than 15,000 people, potential suspects. And I go through that data, and I take it all seriously, but there's usually not much to the suspicions. Usually it's pretty quick and easy to rule out somebody as being a likely candidate. And so through all those names, including the original suspects, there have only been a few suspects that I felt like were worth a close look. And the top guy to me is Richard Vetkowski. He's deceased. He died in 2004 in San Francisco. He was from South Dakota. His family has roots in Webster and also Watertown. And Vetkowski was, he went to Northern States Teachers College in the 1950s in Aberdeen, and ended up working in Albany, New York, and Martinez, California. He was responsible for resurrecting the Roxy Theater in San Francisco in the 1970s, and he's well known in the Bay Area as well as in South Dakota and in parts of New York. And so anybody who thinks they remember Richard or anybody who has any information about Richard Vetkowski, I would love to hear from you. You can contact me through ZodiacKiller.com, and whether you think he is innocent or guilty, I just want to hear from you, and I just want to hear your memories of Richard or anything that you can remember about it. Because if he's the Zodiac, I want to prove it, and if he's not, then I want to quit wasting my time.
And what led you to suspect that Vetkowski is the Zodiac?
Well, there was an informant that came forward who used to know Richard, met him in the 1960s in San Francisco, and chronicled a lot of interesting things about Richard back then. The informant kept an extensive diary that I've seen that is from the 60s, and didn't really suspect Richard at the time of being a Zodiac killer. But 15 years later or so, by the mid-1980s, the informant really began to put his suspicions together and started building a case against Gajkowski, essentially, and did a lot of great research pre-internet. It was very impressive, the research that the informant did, collected handwriting samples, collected photographs, voice recordings, a lot of recorded conversations between the two. And in fact, the handwriting of Gajkowski's was so compelling, it was turned into the Department of Justice in California, and their handwriting expert said that there were similarities between Gajkowski's handwriting and the Zodiac's handwriting, and the Department of Justice requested more samples that they could continue to scrutinize Gajkowski's handwriting because it was like the Zodiac's. Unfortunately, the informant had given all the handwriting samples that he had and could not find any more. And I found that it's extremely difficult to find Gajkowski's handwriting. He usually wrote in a combination of printing and cursive, or he typed. He didn't print very much. So it's very frustrating. But I know there's more of Gajkowski's handwriting out there to get. I know there's more Zodiac evidence out there to collect and share with the public. And so, you know, that's why the GoFundMe campaign is so important. But Gajkowski is at the top of my list. And it's going to take a lot to prove that he's the Zodiac, but it's also going to take, more to prove to me that he wasn't.
One of the earlier callers wondered whether the Zodiac had served in the Army, perhaps a returning Vietnam vet. And Gajkowski, in fact, did serve a stint in the Army during the 1950s, and he was also trained as a medic, which is significant, as you point out on your website, ZodiacKiller.com. Why is Gajkowski's training as a medic important in this case?
Well, there are two things. The first, that's not in order of importance, so I'll give you the least important first. Medics, the symbol that they wore on their uniform and on their helmet was a cross circle symbol, and that's the same symbol that the Zodiac chose to represent himself in his letters, the cross circle. That was the sign of a medic, and they usually wore it on their helmets. But to me, what's even more important and extremely substantial is that in San Francisco, when the Zodiac killed Paul Stein, he was sitting in the passenger seat, and he pulled his dead victim over to the passenger seat, and he handled the victim, who was bleeding profusely, and he proceeded to pull the shirt tail of the victim out of the victim's pants. He then tore a neat rectangle of fabric from the shirt, and then made off with that. And eventually, he mailed a couple pieces of that shirt to the San Francisco Chronicle in his letters. But what's significant is that is exactly what medics are trained to do with an injured victim. In the field, medics are trained to use the victim's shirt tail, preferably, because that's going to be the cleanest. And if you can't get to the shirt tail or the undershirt, then you need to use the shirt tail. And that's what medics do. If you watch old war movies, if the medic doesn't have access to their bandages and so forth, then they will use the victim's own shirt tail. They will collect it and they will tear it. They don't cut it, they tear it very neatly. And, of course, a medic in the field is going to use that shirt tail for a bandage. And the Zodiac did the same thing a medic would do, except he took the shirt tail with him and ended up sending it back to the police. So he behaved much like a medic up until the point he left the cab. And I think that's very substantial because Gajkowski, as you mentioned, was a medic in the Army and would have had those skills to be able to neatly tear a piece of fabric in a perfect rectangle.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And I think it's Rick in Phoenix on the wildcard line. Rick, are you there?
Yeah, this is him. Hi.
Hi, thanks for your patience. Welcome aboard.
Thank you. I have two quick questions about Richard Gajkowski. One of them was, I know he died in 2004. What happened to all his personal items and possessions that were at his apartment? And question number two would be, was Tom ever able to get Brian Hartnell, who was one of the Zodiac survivors, was he able to hear the recordings of Gajkowski and confirm or deny?
Thanks. Those are good questions. I'll answer the last one first. Victim Brian Hartnell did have a discussion with the Zodiac at Lake Berryessa in 1969. And in 2009, I was part of a TV show called Mystery Quest. And the subject matter of the show, it was a one-hour show. I think it's on YouTube. You can find it. It was on the History Channel initially. And they focused on Richard Gajkowski as being potentially the Zodiac. They wanted Brian Hartnell to be involved, and Hartnell didn't want to be involved in the show, but he did agree to listen to the recordings of Gajkowski's voice. The stipulation was that Hartnell would not comment. He would not give his thoughts on Gajkowski's voice, period. So the voice was provided to Hartnell, and Hartnell kept his word and has not said anything. So I don't know if Hartnell recognized the voice or if he didn't, or, you know, it's one of those, it's very frustrating because there was someone who spoke to the Zodiac who definitively said, this is Richard Gajkowski. She heard Gajkowski's voice and she said, that is the voice I heard.
Tell us about that. What were the circumstances under which this woman heard Gajkowski's voice?
Nancy Slover, who passed away just a few years ago, was a dear friend. She was the police dispatcher in 1969 for the Vallejo Police Department when the Zodiac called the police to report his double shooting in July 1969. And so Nancy Slover was in the safety of a police station when she took that call, and she listened very closely to what was being said. And she wasn't in any type of immediate danger, but she was, you know, she was feeling very nervous about what the caller was saying. She made a report about the call, and it was definitely the Zodiac who she talked to. And at that point, she didn't really have any more involvement in the case until I found her about 7 years ago. And I was very curious about her story, and I wanted her to listen to the audio recordings I collected of the various suspects. She didn't really have an opinion on whether she thought she would remember the Zodiac's voice or recognize the Zodiac's voice. I played her most of the suspects, including Rick Marshall and, you know, all the recordings I had of the various suspects, and she didn't have a reaction to any of them. When I finally played her Richard Gajkowski's voice, which was taken from a phone call, so she was listening to how he sounded over the phone, just as she heard how Zodiac sounded over the phone, and her reaction was, first of all, she had a physical, an immediate physical reaction, and she could no longer talk to me. The friend that she was with at the time had to call me back and was extremely worried about Nancy's health because it essentially caused initially a physical reaction, and then the emotional reaction of hearing that voice again was such that she had to go into psychotherapy. That's how powerful it was when she heard Gajkowski's voice. She went on to talk to experts in the field that have told her, you absolutely, since it was such a significant event when you talked to the Zodiac, that could easily be stored in your brain, and you could easily relive it if you hear that voice again, or if you experience any sensation that reminds you of that place and time, it can all come flooding back. And that's exactly what happened to her. So, like she told me, Richard Gajkowski was a Zodiac, or Richard Gajkowski was the identical twin brother of the Zodiac.
At any point, was Gajkowski on the radar of the police? Was he hauled in and questioned and considered a suspect?
Well, he was kind of an unlikely suspect. To answer your question, yes. The informant did go to the various police departments. The informant, a very eccentric man named Blaine. And the police are used to dealing with unstable people. And Blaine is a brilliant guy, but he is not, he's not someone that you're probably used to dealing with. Yeah, he's a very eccentric man, and his physical appearance and his overall demeanor is eccentric. So the police refer to people like that as kooks. So he wasn't really taken seriously from the get-go, but when he did provide that interesting handwriting, then law enforcement all of a sudden wanted more. It's just that Blaine didn't have more. One of the problems was Blaine went to multiple agencies instead of sticking with one. If he had stuck with one, I think he would have had more luck. Now, Caskey was living in San Francisco, and the San Francisco Police Department didn't want anything to do with investigating Caskey because they thought the plane was just some kook, and they had no reason to believe that this local artist could be the Zodiac. So all the interest in Richard, within law enforcement came from agencies that had no jurisdiction over Richard. And since there was no court order for a search warrant, there wasn't enough evidence. Eventually, the police, nobody was looking at Richard Gajkowski. It turns out that what Richard ended up telling one of the agencies was that he couldn't be the Zodiac because he was in Europe during the Zodiac crimes. And we've since learned that was absolutely a lie. He was not in Europe. Our research has shown that Richard can be placed exclusively in California from May 1969, pretty much until he died. And the only Zodiac crime in question where Richard was not living in California was the December 1968 attack. And we can't place Richard anywhere. We can't pinpoint his whereabouts. He could have been in California, and I think it's likely he was.
What about DNA evidence? Did the informant, Blaine, provide any DNA?
No, Blaine didn't, but I was able to, through the TV show in 2009 called Mystery Quest, the show's producers were able to obtain some letters that Gajkowski had written and sent a friend, and he had apparently licked the stamps and envelopes, and DNA was taken from those stamps and envelopes. And so Richard's DNA is a matter of record. The show then sent Richard's DNA to various law enforcement agencies, hoping that they would compare it to the Zodiac's suspected DNA, which is on file somewhere within the law enforcement agencies, and nothing's been done. And I don't know why. And it's a simple comparison to make, but the San Francisco Police Department is more concerned with current crime. They're a tourist town. They got to make tourists feel safe. And so, you know, these 45-year-old cold cases simply don't have priority. If they did have priority, then we would know if the DNA matched. But, you know, California law enforcement is pretty much broke, in San Francisco especially. They just don't have the funding, and they don't have the manpower to mess around with these, you know, these cold cases that they're sick of. You know, websites like mine are where these police agencies refer people who contact them and want to talk about the Zodiac. They say go to ZodiacKiller.com.
That just sounds absolutely unbelievable to me, that they have this DNA evidence. As you say, it would be, you know, fairly simple to make that comparison, and yet they're not interested, despite the fact that this case, 45 years later, has such interest worldwide. I mean, we had an email from a woman in Athens, in Greece, tonight, very curious about this case.
In San Francisco, the crime lab that the San Francisco Police Department used suffered from this horrible scandal right before I filmed this TV show. One of the workers of the crime lab had been doctoring evidence and so forth. So a lot of credibility was lost and a lot of confidence was lost in this crime lab, which is probably one reason why San Francisco didn't go ahead and do it.
All right, Tom, stay put. We'll come back after the break and one final half hour with Tom Voigt before Open Lines as we continue to delve into the Zodiac Killer. Stay with us here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Sitting in for George Norrie, and I'll be back Saturday night into Sunday morning when I welcome Richard Allen Miller, a pioneer in the annals of metaphysical and paranormal exploration, and we'll discuss protocols that were developed for the Navy SEALs to create super soldiers and how these tools can be used today for your own evolution of consciousness. And in the first hour, Dr. Uffe Ravenscroft, who will argue that the cholesterol campaign is the greatest medical scandal of modern time. That's right. Cholesterol, according to Dr. Ravenscroft, who's a nephrologist in Sweden, cholesterol is not the culprit behind heart disease. My conversation with Tom Voigt as we drill down into the 45-year unsolved murder mystery known as the Zodiac Killer. Back with more of that conversation when Coast to Coast continues. Stay with us. Tom Voigt from ZodiacKiller.com stays with us until the top of the hour, and then we will commence, finally, with open lines. But we continue with a full board of lines, and Brian, west of the Rockies in Roanoke, Virginia, has been very patient, and for that I am eternally grateful. Brian, you're on the line with Tom. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I was just curious to Tom's opinion or thoughts on where Bruce Davis, the former Manson family member who's in prison right now, and actually has been paroled, recommended for parole a few times, but the governor's denied him, where he ranks him as far as a candidate for the Zodiac, or has he ruled him out already?
There's been extensive research done by Howard Davis into the potential role of the Manson family in the Zodiac crimes. And it's been Howard's project for probably 25 years, and he's collected a lot of data. The suspect that you're talking about is Bruce Davis, is the suspect's name. And he was recommended. He was up for parole. I don't know if he's going to get it. He was convicted of murder, and he did slightly resemble the Zodiac composite in the sense of the he had a buzz cut at one point, as the Zodiac did. But I've seen Bruce Davis's handwriting, and that's one thing that really rules him out, as far as I'm concerned, is because Bruce had very distinctive handwriting, and it looks nothing like the Zodiac's, in my opinion. Also, I think the Zodiac was an individual, not part of a kill group like the Mansons were. So I have my reasons for not really thinking too much of Bruce Davis as a suspect, but I would still recommend that people Google Howard Davis and his website and research into the case, because he's uncovered quite a bit about the Mansons. And Howard's also uncovered a lot of really valuable information about the Zodiac case as well. And I just remembered that a previous caller asked a question that we didn't get to before the break, and it was about Richard Gajkowski's death in 2004 and what became of his belongings.
Yes, great. Thank you.
Yeah, I recently, just last month, I finally got to get into the building where Richard was living when he died in 2004. On Guerrero Street in San Francisco in the Mission District. And it's now a nail salon, unfortunately. It got renovated a few months ago. Richard lived there for a very long time, and when he died in 2004, he became very ill very suddenly. He had a cough, a persistent cough, and it was misdiagnosed. And so when he started to go downhill with lung cancer, it happened very quickly. I've been in contact with the executor of Richard's will, and he is extremely uncooperative. I don't really believe that Richard would have saved materials, any type of evidence from his crimes. Maybe he did if he was the Zodiac. But it's important to remember the Zodiac was only the Zodiac from August 1969 until March of 1971, less than 2 years. And then he disappeared for a few years. And when he came back writing his letters, he was no longer calling himself the Zodiac. And he wrote a few more letters in 1974 and then disappeared for good. So he was only the Zodiac for about 20 months. If it was so important to the Zodiac that he would keep mementos from his crimes and keep the original weapons and keep the original executioner's costume, if that stuff was so important to him, then I think he would have stayed the Zodiac longer than he did. So I really don't think that he would have felt any compulsion to save physical evidence or mementos from his crimes. I think he probably would have discarded them rather quickly. It's awesome to think that maybe there's going to be some type of a storage facility in one of the suspect's names that's been abandoned for 20 years, and we go in there and we find all the evidence of the Zodiac crimes. That would be great, but I don't, realistically, it was only important enough for the Zodiac to be the Zodiac for about 20 months. So for him to hang on to this stuff decades later, I don't think is realistic. So
but you've pointed out, Tom, though, you don't need that. You've got DNA evidence, and it's just waiting to be compared. And I mean, how are you going to solve this without the police taking that step? Can you go to a district attorney in San Francisco and ask that individual to do something about it?
Well, that's a roadblock I've run into, is I have people who are willing to do certain things, but they're not willing to do it for free.
which is why I launched the GoFundMe campaign. It's not just to pay for research trips to the Bay Area or, you know, case-related expenses that I run into. It's also to just point blank give someone a couple $1,000s so they will go ahead and run the test. I have to find the right person who has the actual access to the Zodiac DNA profile, who also has access to Richard's DNA profile, and you know, they're not willing to do it for free. Sometimes people are willing to do work for me for free. They're willing to give stuff for documents for free. They're willing to just help. And other times I have people that, you know, they want to be paid. And quite often it's informants who claim to know who the Zodiac is, and they're willing to share it with me for $2,000. You know, I run into that all the time now because this case is so popular and there are so many people familiar with it now, including people that, you know, that aren't necessarily out to do the right thing. You know, if I thought I knew who the Zodiac was, then I would go to the police and you know, there's a right way to do it and there's a wrong way. There are people that just want to sell their information to make a quick buck, or because they want to have some connection to this very famous case that gets more famous every year. There's a new movie or a TV documentary, and it's now part of the, you know, it's pop culture in America now, the Zodiac. If you follow Google and you look for Google News alerts for the term Zodiac killer, you're going to find that some newspaper somewhere is making a Zodiac reference. Somebody, some celebrity is making a reference to the Zodiac killer. That happened just recently. There was a sports article for a Bay Area football team where one of the players said that the coach was like the Zodiac killer. I mean, everybody's using this reference now because so many people are familiar with the case. In 1998, when I launched ZodiacKiller.com, that wasn't so. I mean, very few people really knew much about it. And now, when I meet somebody who really doesn't know anything about the Zodiac case, I'm really surprised.
All right, let's go to the first time caller line, and Dave is in Boise, Idaho. Good morning, Dave. Welcome to Coast.
Thanks. Great to be here. Keep it up, Tom. You'll get them someday. I was wondering about the timeline, what the timeline was, because I'm sure this is nothing, but I know this guy, he got stationed out there in California. And then when he come home, the Zodiac stopped, and I used to razz him that, you know, he was a Zodiac killer and everything. And then once we went hunting, this is all things I thought back years later. I didn't think anything about the time. I almost got hit with what I thought was a stray bullet. I mean, I heard the crack, and I was just wondering what the time frame was. I'll see if that's when he was out there.
Well, the known Zodiac crime spanned from December 1968 through October 1969. But there were so many unsolved cases throughout California in the 1960s into the mid-1970s. So many women, primarily, and turning up dead, and young couples. I mean, it wasn't something that was exclusive to the San Francisco Bay Area. So many unsolved cases that the Zodiac could have started who knows when, and he could still be killing. But the known Zodiac murders were from December 1968 to October 1969.
Tom, did you ever attempt to contact Rick Gajkowski while he was alive?
Indirectly. When I moved to San Francisco to research the case full-time in March of 2004, I didn't know that he only had a month to live. And very soon after moving to San Francisco, I started meeting with one of the detectives that was in charge of the Zodiac case, who had recently retired. And over quite a few beers at one of the local Irish pubs, I found that the San Francisco police simply never seriously looked at Richard Gajkowski as a suspect because they felt the informant was just not credible. And I said, well, you know, who cares if the information the informant has is compelling information, and then who cares if he has purple hair? Who cares if he doesn't have all his teeth? But, you know, that's the attitude of law enforcement. They get jaded sometimes, and they're used to dealing with kooks. And so, you know, I think the ball was dropped. And when I found out that the informant wasn't taken seriously, I immediately, at ZodiacKiller.com, I put word out that I was looking for this informant, that I was in San Francisco, and I was looking for Blaine, and I didn't know where he lived. I knew he was living in a van somewhere. So I updated my news page at 38kilo.com, letting people know back in early 2004, I'm looking for Blaine, you know, because I knew at that point we have a suspect who has never really been looked at by the San Francisco police. Unfortunately, the next month, Gajkowski died, and I wasn't able to contact Blaine for, it was about 4.5 years before I was put in contact with him.
All right, let's go to Bob in Los Angeles, who's also been waiting a while on the wild card line. Bob, thanks for hanging in. You're on.
Yeah, only an hour and a half, but that's okay. Actually, I understand that the connection between Black Dahlia and Zodiac have similarities because it's not very common that there are what is called signature crimes, the crimes that leave a lot of clues, like Jack the Ripper and Black Dahlia and Zodiac, and that's about it, by the lipstick killer. But I'm calling actually about the Halloween card that Zodiac sent. You're aware of that, with a skeleton wearing a red mask? Anyway, hello? Yeah.
Yeah, Tom, the Halloween card. The Halloween card, Tom.
Correct.
Yeah, the Halloween card, which says by fire, by gun, by rope, by knife. And it has been discovered that the skeleton, again, the Halloween card, is wearing a red mask, and that there is a Tim Holt comic book called Red Mask, on which there is a game wheel which says the same things, by rope, by fire, by knife, by gun, all the things that were said on the Halloween card. The connection with this and Black Dahlia, for example, is that Dr. Hodel, one of the suspects, was a friend of Tim Holt, the cowboy actor who did the Red Mask comic books. And Tim Holt's girlfriend was staying at Dr. Hodel's house in Hollywood. Zodiac leaving a clue as to his identity. There's also, when Dr. Hodel's house was tapped by the police department, he pretty much confessed to the Black Dahlia killing. He said, I've got a quote here, he said, supposing I did kill the Black Dahlia, they couldn't prove it now, they can't talk to my secretary anyway because she's dead. And there's a lot of evidence that he killed his secretary to shut her up about it. And he wasn't able to be arrested, even though evidently the DA's office knew that he had done it, because being an illegal abortionist, he'd handle a lot of very high-level abortions for people who were in very high places. So they just closed the case. I'm sure you're aware of all of these details.
Right, and the suspect you're referring to is George Hill Hodel, who was one of the original suspects in the Black Dahlia murders. And the reference you made, the comic book reference to by fire, by knife, by rope, and so forth, you know, that could be significant in relating to Hodel, or it simply could be that Zodiac would have been the right age to be reading comic books when that was published. We know that that Zodiac made references in his letters to the Mikado, particular parts of the Mikado musical, and he quoted lyrics from the Mikado, and that was thought, well, this is significant. He must have been someone who performed the Mikado, maybe in high school. He was in the theater, or he must be a Mikado buff. But, you know, it was a very popular, the Mikado was experiencing a resurgence in the late 1960s, and it would have been possible to be familiar with lyrics to the Mikado just by turning on your radio. You didn't even have to have been in, you know, the opera, or been an opera fan, or had been in drama in high school. So Zodiac seemed to be well-read, and he would have been mature in 1969. He certainly would have been at least in his 30s. So making a comic book reference could point to him simply being the age of reading the comics in the 1940s, or it could be something much deeper. And of course, when the identity of the Zodiac is proven, then it's going to be possible to go back and look at the Halloween card and the ciphers and all the other letters and find clues that will be obvious in hindsight. All these clues will be obvious in hindsight once we have the right guy and once it's been proven.
Thanks for the call.
Hello?
Let me just move along, and I appreciate the call. Tom, so, I mean, you're pretty well convinced that, you have the right guy, that it is this Richard Gajkowski. But is there one piece of the puzzle that you're still missing that would really nail this shut? I mean, you have the DNA evidence, and that's just sitting there. There's not much you can do about that at the moment. But is there another piece of the puzzle that, would really nail this shut?
Well, Richard was someone who was an innovator on the internet, which is really interesting. He would have been, he was born in 1936. I wasn't on the internet until the mid 90s. Richard was developing databases and news groups on the internet by the late 1980s. And he was by then, you know, 50 years old, over 50 years old. Very unusual for someone that age to take on new technology the way he did. And I really think that there might be postings at a news group somewhere, maybe under an alias, that might give clues to his past crimes. He had his own website, which had some interesting animated GIFs that seemed to be taunting. He had some interesting codes and interesting website page names. So I think the internet might be, of course, we've been searching these clues for 6-7 years. But Gajkowski had such a strong internet presence in the infancy of the internet that he might have left some postings somewhere at some news group, some website. Other than that, I'm just trying to obtain as much handwriting as I can from him. I'm trying to contact as many people as I can who knew him, whether they knew him in South Dakota or in Albany, New York, or Martinez, California, or in San Francisco. He drove a cab at one point in San Francisco. He worked for Pat Bell. He was part of the Roxy Theater. He did quite a bit. He was part of the punk rock scene, and he knew a lot of people and touched a lot of people. And, you know, I'm just waiting to hear from them. And whether you have information that tends to incriminate him or tends to exonerate him, I want to find out as much as I can about this guy. Like I said, if he's a Zodiac, I want to prove it. And if he's not, I certainly don't want to waste any more of my time on it.
Well, I really appreciate the time you spent with us, Tom. It's a fascinating chapter, and you're close. I mean, you're on the cusp. Let's hope that final piece of the puzzle comes to the fore. And I know you're in sort of a race against the clock here, a race against the Undertaker. You know, many of the people that might be able to provide that puzzle could be gone one day soon. So anyway, again, I appreciate your time, Tom. And that's ZodiacKiller.com. Back with Open Lines. When Coast to Coast continues, my name is Richard Serrett. Stay with us.